Good afternoon. Welcome to the inaugural Women's Health Show here at WGXC.org. We will be airing the second Monday of every month at 3 p.m., and I hope you'll be tuning in the future. My name is Nancy Rosenzweig, and I'm a certified nurse midwife who's the host of this show. Some days we'll be having interviews. Many days I'll be answering questions that you can email into the show or call into the station. And hopefully we may have some live call-in shows. Today's show is about the most common event for women when she goes for her annual exam visit. You might be going to an OBGYN. You might be going to your family practice doctor, an internist. You might also be going to a midwife or nurse practitioner for this visit. Some of you might not even know who you're seeing when you go to the office. So I would suggest it's always a good idea to ask and find out the background of the person who's doing the visit with you. For some women, there's a lot of fear, a lot of worry. Many women don't like going for their annual visit. So part of my job today, and what I'd love to do, is demystify the exam a little bit and talk to you about what we're looking for and what you can expect and how you can take part in the decision-making about what tests get done so that you know more about the exam and feel more comfortable. Individual women vary tremendously in their knowledge of and comfort with their own bodies. While some might be quite open in disclosing sexual, reproductive, or genital concerns, others will find such discussions embarrassing or socially inappropriate. So it's essential that the healthcare provider whom you see maintains a sensitive and non-judgmental approach during this encounter. The first part of the appointment is taking your history, and this history must be obtained in a relaxed and private setting, well before you are ever asked to take your clothes off for the exam. You should be interviewed alone under almost all circumstances, unless there's a hearing or a language barrier, and all women should know that you must be able to have someone who can translate for you if English is not your first language. The questioning should proceed from a very straightforward, objective information to the more delicate issues. And your healthcare provider should respond to your comfort level and make every effort to be supportive during that. We hope that all healthcare providers avoid making any assumptions about your background, but it is very important that your healthcare provider not make any assumptions that you are sexually active or not, or you're a heterosexual. Your healthcare provider should begin the history with open-ended questions that will elicit your own concerns, so that before they start asking any questions of you, you should be allowed to say why you're there and voice any concerns you might have about your body, so that we also know what to look for when we do an exam later on. The basic components of a gynecological history are the following. First of all, what's your menstrual history? How old were you when you first got your period? What's your cycle length and how many days do you bleed? So a cycle length is the number of days from day one of your menstrual period to day one of the next menstrual period. For some people it's 28 days, but for other people it's 21 days or 35 days. There's no exact normal. Whatever's normal for you is what we care about. We also want to know if you've ever been pregnant in your life. So when we ask a woman her history of pregnancies, we want to know about all of them, not just the ones that ended up with alive babies. So it is important that you disclose if you were ever pregnant. how many times you were pregnant, the number of children you've had born full term, which is more than 37 weeks pregnant, the number of children that were born premature, if you've ever had a miscarriage, how far pregnant you were when you had that miscarriage, and if you ever had any elective terminations or abortions. Ectopic pregnancies are also asked about. If you've ever tried to not get pregnant in your life, we want to know the types of contraception you've used and whether or not you had side effects, a good experience with them, or a not so good experience with them. A lot of times, people think the words birth control just mean birth control pills. But hopefully, you realize that there are many, many different types of birth control that women and men use. And it may be a hormonal type, like a pill or a Depo-Provera shot or a Nuva ring, which gets inserted in the vagina. Or it might be something that doesn't have any hormones in it at all, most commonly condoms, pulling out before having an orgasm, putting in a diaphragm or a vaginal sponge. There's so many different types of birth control methods, even just knowing your cycle, knowing when you're fertile or not. So that's important for us. If you're there with any types of complaints, hopefully you can discuss the symptoms that you're having. The most common ones, of course, are a vaginal discharge that's unfamiliar to you, a bump or a lesion you see on your body you never saw before, some sort of pain, abnormal bleeding, or maybe you're wondering whether or not you've gotten an infection from a sexual partner and you want to be screened for that. The Pap test is also part of the history in the exam. So we definitely want to know if you've ever had a pap smear before in your life, what were the results, and we want to talk to you about what a pap smear is. So I'll get to that a little bit later, but as part of the history, we always want to know when your last test was and if you've ever had one where you were told it was not normal. If you've ever had any other gynecological problems, such as ovarian cysts, uterine fibroids, had trouble getting pregnant, anything like that, we want to know about it. If you've ever had any procedures, operations, or investigative operations like a laparoscopy, we want to know about that. We will ask you questions about other parts of your life, any kind of medical problems, prescription medication you take, over-the-counter medication, herbs, vitamins, supplements. We want to know your surgical history, your social history, and your family history, because it might affect the kind of testing we do on you to find out if your siblings or your parents or your grandparents had any special problems in their history. We will ask you if you smoke cigarettes, if you smoke marijuana, how much alcohol you drink. And we'll definitely ask you a sexual history. A sexual history is important, and it's important to tell the truth to us because we need to know what we should be looking for and what you might be at risk for. A good sexual history includes the following questions. Do you have any sexual concerns? Are you currently having or have you ever had sexual relations? When did you last engage in a sexual activity? Do you have sex with men? Do you have sex with women? Do you have sex with both men and women? Have you recently had any new partners or sexual contacts? Do you protect yourself from getting pregnant? Do you protect yourself from getting sexually transmitted infections? How do you do that? Would you like to be screened for sexually transmitted infections? Do you need any contraceptive counseling or preconceptional counseling, which means are you trying to get pregnant? And what can we do to help you have a healthy pregnancy? Are you currently experiencing, or have you ever experienced, any previous sexual abuse or unwanted sexual advances? I'm hoping to talk about ooey-gooey vaginal discharges in another show, but just today, I really want women to understand that having a vaginal discharge is very, very normal. Many reproductive age women have a daily vaginal discharge. A normal vaginal discharge is composed of mucousy secretions. These secretions are typically clear, white, or light yellow in color. The volume varies considerably among women and on the timing in your menstrual cycle. So if you have any concerns about your discharge, you should know when it first started, how long it's been going on, how often it happens to you, the color, the consistency, whether or not there's an odor. If you have a discharge that has a really bad odor, is really itchy, is thick and copious, if it's bloody, if you feel sick or have a fever that goes along with it, we definitely need to investigate and find out what's going on. But so many women worry about a perfectly normal discharge. And we will be talking about that in a future show in terms of all the different types of normal and not normal discharge. But when you are going for your visit with your midwife, doctor, or nurse practitioner, you should bring up any concerns you have about whether or not what you notice is normal. So a pelvic exam is indicated for anyone who comes in with a complaint that needs to be evaluated, but in other people, just for preventive care. Not every single test is done by having a pelvic exam. And you should know whether or not it's necessary for you to have one or not. For example, a lot of young women are scared that they have a sexually transmitted infection, but maybe they're worried that the exam is going to be so uncomfortable that they don't want to go in and be tested. So right away, you should know that you can get a birth control method, you can be tested for certain A pelvic examination is indicated with anyone who comes in with a complaint about symptoms that need to be evaluated, and in many other women just for preventive care. But it is not necessary in every single case, and we'll talk about that. For teenagers, we want all of you teenagers to be tested for sexually transmitted infections if you're having sex. But it doesn't mean you have to necessarily have a pelvic exam. You also may not have to have a pelvic exam if you're coming to a provider asking for a type of birth control method, a contraceptive method. We do want preventive exams on all women who are age 21 and older. And we'll talk about the frequency of how often you have to have them and who needs to have them. Before anyone does a pelvic examination on you, the components and the benefits of the exam should be explained to you. Every effort should be made to communicate with you, to reassure you, and the exam should be stopped if you are too anxious or uncomfortable. I found in my years of doing many, many exams on women that if I explain each step of the exam in advance, warm the instruments, and give you the most gentle exam I can possibly give while still getting the information I need, it's a lot easier on women. Another point is that many women erroneously equate having a speculum put inside of them with getting a pap test. So let's talk a little bit about what a pap test is. A pap test, or called a pap smear, is a test we do to check the cervix for cancer. The cervix is the very bottom part of the uterus. And I hope everyone will go online and check out the correct anatomy so you know where and what the cervix is. If we're doing a pap test, we do have to use a speculum. And a speculum's an instrument. It kind of looks like a duck's beak. And what we do is we put this speculum inside of your vagina, and it pushes apart the walls of the vagina in order for us to see the cervix. In order to get the cells of the cervix that we're testing for cancer, we might use a little brush or a Q-tip type thing to scrape off the cells of the cervix and then send them off to a laboratory to be tested. The pap smear is just one of many tests that we can do when we look inside of your vagina or look at your cervix. We might be testing for sexually transmitted infections, or we might be testing for just alterations in the acid, base, or bacterial balance of your vagina. So depending upon your age and your history about pap smears, not every time you go for your annual visit will a pap smear be necessary. Right now, we're testing women age 21 through 29 with a pap smear every 1 to 2 years. And the reason is that this may be the period in a woman's life where she might be having different sexual partners and be exposed to infections more often. But most women should know that cervical cancer is a slow-growing cancer, and if we regularly test your body, test your cells for any evidence of change or change that could be leading to cancer, most women do just fine and can remain healthy throughout their lifetime. But every single time we put a speculum in your vagina, it doesn't mean you're having a pap smear. Once a woman is 30, if she's had 3 normal paps in a row, we can start switching to having these tests done every 2 to 3 years. And if you have a special test called an HPV test, which stands for human papillomavirus, and this is a virus that's been shown to lead to cervical cancer, if that test is negative, women age 30 and older can switch to having pap tests every 3 years. Women age 65 and older can stop having paps altogether if they meet these 3 requirements: that they have had paps done regularly until they turn 65, they've had 3 normal paps in a row, and they've had no abnormal paps in the past 10 years. Now, even with these recommendations, women need to know if you have more than one sexual partner, if you think your sexual partner is having sex with anybody else, then you do need to continue to get these tests, because having new sexual partners, multiple sexual partners you can't trust, might mean that you are putting yourself at risk for getting infections. Also important to remember is that when we talk about not needing a pap every year, that doesn't mean you don't need an exam every year. So remembering that a pap test is only one test that is done every single time you go for your annual GYN exam. We talked about testing for sexually transmitted infections. Well, depending upon how old you are, you might have heard STDs, which used to be what we called sexually transmitted infections. That stands for sexually transmitted diseases. If your even older folk, you might remember the term VD, which stood for venereal disease. Right now, we're trying to be more correct and explicit and say STIs, which stands for sexually transmitted infections. These are infections that you catch from having sex with someone who has an infection. They can be caused by certain bacteria, they can be caused by certain viruses, and some other little critters that are out there. The most common infections include chlamydia, gonorrhea, herpes, warts, hepatitis type B, hepatitis type C, syphilis, trichomoniasis, and HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, the virus that causes AIDS. So doing a sexually transmitted infection screening is a way of giving you a series of tests to find out if you have any. And the reason we often ask people if they want to be tested for sexually transmitted infections is that some of these infections, in fact, many of these infections, don't cause symptoms, which means you can have an infection and not know it. That's what makes the screening so important. So we recommend that if you're at risk for getting an infection, that you're screened at your annual visit, even if you have no symptoms and you feel just fine. If you had unprotected sex with one person, you could be at risk. So screening for these infections alert us you have it, and we can get you treatment, which will prevent the infection from getting worse and really bothering you, and will certainly keep you from infecting other people. So that's a very important reason for screening. How can you protect yourself from getting a sexually transmitted infection? Well, obviously, the only way to be sure you won't get one is by not having any sex. And if you do have sex, you can lower your chance of getting an STI by using a condom every single time you have sex. But you know what? Even if you use condoms every single time, you can still get infections. That's because condoms don't cover all of the skin that comes in contact with another person. Some infection can spread just from skin-to-skin contact. Condoms can break. They can slip off. And what is sex? Sometimes when people talk about sex, they talk about vaginal intercourse, a man or boy putting his penis into a woman or girl's vagina. But we all know there are other types of sex acts. Just touching another person's body or genitals, using your mouth, your tongue on somebody else's genitals, putting a penis or a different object into another person's anus. This is anal sex. So we test for these infections in different ways depending upon which infection it is. Chlamydia and gonorrhea can be tested for both with a Q-tip in your cervix or through your urine. Herpes, if you want to find out if you've ever had it in the past, we could do a blood test to find out if you have type 1 or type 2. This is called herpes simplex virus, HSV. Herpes is a virus that once you have it in your body, you can't ever get rid of it. Some people have what are called outbreaks where they have symptoms, and we can talk about this on another show, but you should know that it's very, very easily passed to sexual partners, often because a lot of people don't even know they have it. There are genital warts, which are often show up as cauliflower-looking type bumps on a person's genitals, and this can be passed back and forth to each other just by touching. Hepatitis B and hepatitis C need a blood test to find out if someone has that. Same with syphilis. HIV, we can now do saliva tests, or blood tests. Much easier. Trichomoniasis we can look for under a microscope, which means we can take a Q-tip, test your vaginal discharge, and look under a microscope to see if we see these little critters swimming around. Or we now have a new lab test where we can put in a Q-tip and send it off to the lab and find out if you have that. So to get back to the exam, the things that you should know will be examined when you go for a GYN exam. We usually examine your breasts and talk to you about what's normal and teach you how to examine your own breasts. We might check your belly to see if there's any tenderness, to see if you have any urinary complaints. We look at the outside of your genitals. We want to make sure everything is developing normally and check for any kind of unusual lesions and or infection. We do the speculum exam, where we put in that duck beak-like instrument, open up your vagina, look around inside, and then look at your cervix to see what's going on, where we may do these cultures, like the pap smear. Then the midwife or doctor will put their hands inside of you and do what's called a bimanual exam, where one hand is inside of you and one hand is on top of your abdomen. And we want to see if we can feel your uterus or ovaries. So we try to feel what the uterus feels like, and we assess it for how big it is, the shape of it is, whether or not it can move, and what position it's in. And we call the adnexa the ovaries and the fallopian tubes, the areas that are attached to the uterus. They're pretty hard to touch, so if we don't feel them, we can almost always assume they're normal. But if we feel something enlarge, we're going to have to investigate that further. I hope this little discussion about your initial GYN exam is helpful for you. The main things I really want you to remember are that you have the right to know exactly what a care provider is doing. You have the right to informed consent. You have the right to privacy. And you have the right to be treated with respect. And if any of those things are not true, you need to find another provider who will care for you with gentleness and consideration and not make this annual exam something you dread. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'll be back in another month. And please feel free to email questions to me at info@wgxc.org. Bye-bye.